Hello, motorcycle enthusiasts. Welcome to the Motorcycle Radio Show on BlasterRadio.com with your host, Johnny Racine. Hello everyone, welcome to the show. This week we have a special guest. His name is Andy Zildjian. Yes, this is not all about motorcycles, but music and motorcycles go together. And me being a drummer, well, I love Sabian Cymbals, and Andy Zed is the president of Sabian Cymbals, so we're going to talk a lot about Neil Peart and some other stuff. So this is part one of the interview with Andy Zildjian.
I know you are extremely busy, and I really, really appreciate your time doing this, because I think it's phenomenal.
I'll tell you a secret. I love doing these things because we get to talk about drumming, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And I get very excited and sometimes a little too passionate when I start talking about cymbals and stuff. So,
So
you can slow me down if you need to. Okay.
Oh gosh. No, please. I mean, this is what this is about, right? As much as this is a motorcycle radio show, it's still a radio station, and me being the host and being a musician myself, and many of my clients who are bikers are musicians too. And many are drummers. So it's a full circle. And, you know, drumming and music goes together. Obviously, music and motorcycles go together. It's,
you know, music goes with everything. I mean,
of course.
Yeah.
That's why music is life.
That's why when you go to a really good restaurant, they have a musician play. When you go to a cheap restaurant, they got TVs.
Very true. Very true. And then you come to my motorcycle shop and you've got this.
Which is kind of cool. Okay. So what's up with the Longhorn, or is that?
It is. It's I found it on Marketplace and I thought it was just cool. So I just bought it and put it in front of the kit because I thought, you know, it gives a little piece to talk about, a little conversation piece on my kit. And I'm a Sabian fan. Every single one of my cymbals are Sabian.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, when I was in high school, this would be early 90s. We received a new Pearl drum kit, a Pearl Export. This was like 1990. And it came with an AA ride, an AA crash, and an AA set of hi-hats. And so Sabian was still quite young back then in 1990.
Actually, I can tell you something. I'm trying not to swear, okay?
No, it's all good. This is public radio. It's radio on the internet. So yeah, you can go ahead.
I don't want to get that part. But no. back in 89, I was traveling the road as a salesman for our distributor at that point. And I was down in the South, the American South.
Yeah.
And I remember that the Pearl, the export kit, had like 60% market share wherever I'd go. I'd have to try to sell them a Sonor kit, and they'd look at me and laugh and go, "Sure, we'll buy one." And say, "Yeah, but you've got 30 kits." Yeah. We'll buy one.
Yeah.
The rest of them were Pearl because they were just so good.
You know what it is? I know a lot about the history of all the drum kits, the manufacturers, cymbals, and all that. And I have to say that, you know, Pearl hit it out of the park with the Export series. Like, the quality of the kit, the sound you got out of them, and the price, the bang for the buck was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you guys did the exact same thing. The unfortunate fallout between Armin and Robert, your father, who led to your father creating something that I believe was far better and was what was needed on the market. Hit the market right at the right time in the early 80s, where, you know, people wanted change, people wanted something different. Sabian also opened up the doors to, you know, the Sabian switchers, where you had the artists coming in and doing all that. And to me, I look at that as a business point of view, and I go, man, that was such the smartest thing you could do. And, you know, I read up on many artists who switched over who said, you know, the other companies I was with, they weren't as, how can I say this? They weren't as, you know, they weren't as productive as Sabian was working with the artists. You know what I mean? They weren't as welcoming. They didn't allow, some of them didn't allow the signature series to be signed on the cymbal, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. There's companies that say, no, it's a signature series, but there's no signature. You know, the artist wasn't allowed to post their name on the cymbal, you know? So Sabian did that, which opened up a whole new thing, which is what Pearl did with the export. So kudos to you guys, because your family has done so much for the music industry. Not only with cymbals, but I mean, you bought another company, Gone Bop or something like that.
Yeah, I love Gone Bop.
But they got some really cool stuff, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you work with different artists, you work with people. I know you're highly involved with PASIC or PASIC, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Is that still going?
Everybody calls it PASIC or PASIC. I don't know which one. I always call it PASIC, just because PAS is the root. And
what is PAS exactly? Can you explain that?
Sure. Yeah, it's Percussive Arts Society, which is it's a group of players. Mostly it started off as, let me take that back. It started off as educators wanting to be able to get together and discuss education, pedagogy, and other things like that. And then when it started growing and becoming more, less about just the academic portion of it, more about how much fun it is to play and other points along those lines, like not just how to teach, but certain methods to make it more fun. It started to grow from there. And that's so PASIC is the international convention of the Percussive Arts Society. So it's Percussive Arts Society International Convention. And it's, you know what? It's one of my favorite. It is my favorite. And the reason is because you're hanging out with drummers the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, there's nothing better than that anyway. And then the other part of it is that you've got all these people who are young, old, whatever, players who really just want to get to know what you've got for instruments. And so instead of being stuck behind the level of only dealers can come to talk to manufacturers, so that would be like a NAMM show, only dealers can come to that kind of thing, you've got actual players coming in and talking to the people who make these instruments and that kind of thing, that kind of interaction. God, I love that, because first of all, you're not talking with people who are afraid to say, I like it because now I have to buy it. They're not that kind of thing. Whereas dealers do have that issue, right? If they say they like it, then everybody's like, good, you're going to buy 10? No, come on. That doesn't happen at PASIC. At PASIC, they come in and they talk and they say, I really like this. Why did you do it? And then we can talk to them about it. How did you do it? We can talk to them about it. Or I'm looking for this for my kit. This is the sound I'm looking for. Great. That's your voice. How do we put it together? I love PASIC for that.
Now, that was founded with your father, Robert, and am I correct saying Vic Firth?
Well, Vic Firth, Remo, there were a few other people who took it from being just a group of educators to a more, I don't want to say commercial, but I guess that would be the right word for it. It's a more of a commercial thing, where it became viable to continue and more open and accessible to more people rather than just the upper echelon university educators, that kind of thing.
So here's a question for you.
Sure.
You're a drummer. Recording
right now, right?
Yep.
Okay.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So you're a drummer yourself.
Not very good, but yes.
Oh, you can work your way around a kit.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, obviously, so you must be, you must be involved in at the factory, I'm sure you're involved when you go there and you're involved in a lot of things, right? Obviously, as the president, you're hands-on, which is important. Now... Yep. I also understand that you're a car enthusiast.
All right, who told you that?
I don't know. Little bird in the tree.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have to say that yes, I was back when you could get three tickets a year and it didn't mean anything.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And back when insurance wasn't nearly as high, and back when it was like, okay, you're going too fast, you slow down now. Whereas nowadays, everybody takes things so dang seriously. And so, I mean, if you are going fast on a highway, you're going... what is it, 20%? If you're going over 20% of the speed limit, then that's something they can arrest you for. I mean, my God, there's no fun in driving anymore.
Yeah, so I guess you'd have to keep it on the track, right?
Yeah.
You've owned a few motorcycles.
You've got to pay for that. So.
Yeah, it's true. And you've owned a few motorcycles, you said.
Oh, okay. Yes. I used to love dirt biking, right? That was just a blast up in Canada, because I'd have nothing but logging roads out in front of you, right? So you'd have 20 miles of logging roads, and then you'd have spots on the side where they had to dig up gravel so that they could fill in different parts of the roads, so you'd have these huge gravel pits. So my God, you had just everything that you'd want to have on a dirt bike. You'd be able to just go out and go nuts. And it was kind of cool because, you know, every once in a while I'd be driving along and like a moose would run out. And one time I had a moose come out of the woods right next to me. We both gave that look like, oh my God. and I hit the gas and he peeled off into the woods.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many times did you have your mom on your back saying, that thing's going to kill you if you're not careful?
Okay. So here's the thing. My folks, because of starting the business, we're traveling and going to different places all the time. We're never really around me that much when I was riding my bike. Right.
So you had a lot of freedom with that.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh yeah. The hardest thing was going down, was having to drive 20 miles to go get gas. Right. That was the biggest thing. Wow. Especially
in Meductic, right? I'm sure it was, you know, back then wasn't as built up as it is now. Has it changed a lot since then?
So Meductic itself, pardon me, Meductic itself, not so much. There are probably two or three more houses that there are in the village of Meductic.
Wow, that's not a lot.
But when you go up the street one direction, you have Woodstock, and that's probably grown by, I'd say, about 40% in the last 15, 20 years.
That's a huge increase.
Fredericton, the capital city of New Brunswick, has just boomed. It's gone from a place where you'd be lucky to have a Hojo's, right?
Oh, really?
To now it's got really cool bars. It's got a nice little music scene. It's got some good restaurants. It's got better hotels. It's got better entertainment. I can't say that it's great entertainment, because for whatever reason, it seems to be discos and not discos, but electronic music, which is not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer acoustic. Yeah. And I suppose, and actually the only real thing that bothers me about Fredericton, because it would be a very cool place to live, but getting anywhere from Fredericton is a flight from there, it's like 5 a.m. to get to Toronto, to wait 5 hours, to then fly over the same place you just left to get to like Europe, right? So,
oh wow, so you're doubling back every time. That's not very efficient.
No,
so would you say that in your area, let's say Meductic and that area, would you say it's a good place for someone to take, like if they were going on a motorcycle trip, to run through there, and lots of places to see, good roads and stuff like that?
So they call New Brunswick the drive-through province.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it's there's not a whole lot going on there, but at the same time the scenery is beautiful. So if you're driving from Quebec just to go down to Nova Scotia, then you're just going to see highway and trees, and it's still nice. You have some pretty vistas, but you're not getting the real taste of what's going on in New Brunswick. If you head down towards like the seashore, or even just go up on the North Shore and come down that way, you're going to get much more variety, a lot more fun, and certainly it's better music scene, it's a better entertainment scene, and there's a lot more things to see and do and entertain yourself with down that way. And it's quite beautiful, really is. And what the neat parts is, you have to go through New Brunswick to get to PEI, Prince Edward Island.
Yes.
And in PEI, I know that you probably know this as well, there's a lot of shallow water between New Brunswick and PEI. And so in the summertime, that water warms up very quickly. So you've got really nice water and swimming.
Oh, really? So you swim in there?
Yeah.
See, I've never been, and I know I'm a Canadian, so I've been all the way west.
Yeah.
But please forgive me for this. I have never been past the Quebec border on the east. That's as far as I've ever gone on my bikes, any one of my bikes. And Meductic has been, and it still is, one of my dream places to go. Naturally, I have to come see you guys because, I mean, I'm not going there and not spending a couple of days and going to see the factory where my favorite symbols are made. And I mean, you can't. So as a biker, I'm going, So telling all the bikers out there, if you're taking a trip, you got to go through Meductic and you got to stop at the Sabian factory no matter what, because it's important and there's great scenery. And, well, it's Canada, man. It's great. It's great.
Neil Peart did it.
Oh yeah, several times too.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss about that. I mean,
I didn't know that was coming up.
Actually, yeah, Andy is Stanky is in communications with me.
Yep.
Chris.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Chris,
you're Stanky's Andy. Great. I'm sorry. Yep. My apologies. Nope. See, I'm so excited right now. I can't even talk. He's been in touch with me, and he said, "Yeah, so we're just going to set up a meeting about that." And you know what's funny is I'm reading Geddy Lee's book.
Yeah,
and he mentions Chris in the book.
Oh, get out, really?
Yes, he does. He mentioned Chris's name because he said Chris was one of the few people who was visiting Neil in LA when just before he passed. He was one of very few people who would fly out and spend time with him, and he actually mentions him in his book. and a few other people. And I thought, so, you know, big kudos to Chris, because it shows what the Sabian family and as a company, who you are, is that you're not just a company, right? You are, you're all like one big fan. Oh, sorry. There we go.
There we go.
I saw so many videos and things that, you know, from the past when your father was being interviewed, and you know how everyone in the company that works there is like one big family. You guys are having big barbecues and stuff like that. And I thought it was amazing. Now, one of the things that really intrigues me with Sabian now is that you guys have a new line of symbols out too, the Stratus series.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I've been reading up on them, and I haven't had a chance to get my hands on any around the area yet, but I'm hoping to try some out soon one day, because I hear that they're actually really nice sounding cymbals, and the price on them is really friendly.
Well, the thing that with the Stratus is Mark, and actually now Randy, Randy Ross, who is Mark's protege, I'd say that would be the right word for him. They put together a cymbal line that has a sound that can work in many different genres, which is really cool, because it's hard to find something like that. I mean, a lot of people will say like AAX and HHX, great sounds, but they're different sounds. So each one will fit into a genre the way that you want it to sound. Whereas the Stratus seems to be a bit more inclusive, let's call it, right?
Yeah.
Seems to hit more places. And it's the reason why it doesn't cost as much is because we don't have to get that sound. We make it in a way that takes less manpower than it does to make like HHX AAX. Cymbals are expensive, but the reason is because we make them by hand. We've got people up there, craftswomen who've been making cymbals for, oh geez, some of these people for 35 years, and they really know what they're doing. But that's a human touch, and the energy that's put into it, and the sound that you get back out, that's all part of that whole thing. And it's expensive to have people make cymbals. So
of course
when Stratus came along and we didn't have to have as much input, human input, still have some, we were able to put it at an easier price. And that's something, I mean, we don't price just because, look, it's new, we're going to price it high. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We base it all on how much it actually costs to make the cymbal.
And I understand where you're talking, you know, where you're coming from when you said it's a cymbal that will, it's got so many varies in sound that it fills a niche, right? Where it's not just for one style of music, it can be used for different styles, right? Mm-hmm. Myself having, you know, I think I've got, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I got 12 different sets of Sabians. I mean,
I've got 12 different
cymbals. No, wait a minute. So I got two different hi-hats. I've got a set of 13 XSRs, which I really
like. Yeah, those are cool.
They're crispy and funky. You can get really funky. I've got a set of AAX hand-hammered fusion.
Yeah.
So those are my main hats. And believe it or not, they're 13s. I had 14-inch AAs that I gave to my son.
Yeah, those were originally designed as 13s.
Who?
The fusion hats. Yeah, we had a guy, Steve Oxenark, who worked for us in Marshfield, who was talking with a lot of artists at that point. And they said, "I want something smaller, tighter, crisper." And so he was talking to Mark, and together they came up with 13-inch fusion hats with that heavier bottom and the lighter top, and just
bang. Oh yeah,
yeah,
beautiful. Well, in all my recordings on my YouTube channel, that's what we're hearing is those. Well, it's for the last 3 months because I picked them up at a ridiculous price and I couldn't say no. And as soon as I put them on the kit, the AA14s were like, okay, these are going to my sons, because you know, this is just, I couldn't beat the sound of them. Right. Mm. I mean, I've got some, I have got one cymbal that's probably, I'm trying to remember the name of the, hold on a second.
Sure.
It is.
It's a cool kit.
It's an AA El Sabor.
Oh, okay. El Sabor. Correct. El Sabor is awesome. That started off when we had this fellow, Pat Rogers, working for us out on the West Coast, and he was talking with a lot of Latin artists.
Okay.
And they were saying that really they liked their cymbals, and we had one that was called Sound Control that they really liked, but rockers were playing it and killing it. They were breaking it. So it kind of had a bad reputation, but that's because it was being used incorrectly at that point. But Latin players loved it because they could go right from the conga and hit that bang, and it would give them a splash. And
yeah,
And so they said, what can you do that could imitate that sound that might give us a, maybe a little bit bigger or smaller and different sizes? And El Sabor was made at that point. And the cool thing was, mostly from timbali players, you could come in and nail that. Hand players, not as well. So later on, I was talking with a couple of our Latin players again and said, look, what's missing? And they said, you know, El Sabor is awesome, but I need something that's a little bit faster, a little bit lighter, something that I can just snap and it goes. And Mark came up with the Picante, which is the El Sabor Picante. And that one directly from Congas, just whack, just the back of your hand, hit that and it gives
that's
it to
pretty
you.
Cool.
Yeah. And like you were saying before, it's like we started working with with artists more openly. And you know, Richie Garcia was one of the folks that we were working with most on the El Sabor. And just having his input, being able to work with him, got all these other Latin players saying, hey, you guys are actually paying attention to what we're asking for. And like, yeah. Yeah,
that's
tell us.
That's what I was talking about Sabian, how I've watched interviews with artists online and how they speak about their cymbals and their equipment, right? Like some people have the Yamaha drums and they have every reason, you know, to switch to Yamaha or Tama, whatever. But Sabian always comes out on top where the artists talk about how amazing it was to go right into the factory, you know, and be involved with Chris and other people in there and, you know, talking about how the cymbals were being made, and they would sit there in a room and try it out, go, yeah, no, that wasn't, you know, maybe it needs a little darker or, you know, a little more of this, a little more of that. And your craftsmen are right in there like, yeah, okay, we're going to change this and change that, you know, and it was just incredible how the artists were so enthusiastic about how they go there. They feel at home. They stay in Meductic. You know, and they're just like, this is like heaven for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Chester Thompson's one of them. The stuff he talks about Sabian in some of his interviews, he just can't say enough about the company and how happy he is that he can go in there like he did and spend time and say, I want a cymbal that sounds like this.
Yeah.
And you guys take the time to do it. And that's such an amazing thing. And I have to say, like, massive congratulations to Sabian, because it's incredible. And when I heard in the early 2Ks, I think it was like 2003, maybe, when Neil Peart switched over in that era, I was like, it was about time, you know? And then I heard that he had a ride.
Yes.
That he didn't even know was actually Canadian made. And it was his favorite ride for decades. Yep. And he was like, what? This was made in Canada? Like, this would have been the Zilko days, right?
Not really.
No? Okay.
Zilko days probably ended like in the mid-70s. But ASCO, as it was called.
ASCO. That's what it was.
Right.
Yes, that's what it is.
It was going on longer because around 1975, 76, when my dad bought up the old factory in Istanbul, and brought over Michael, Kerepe, and Gabriel, brought over those three and taught everybody how to hand hammer. At that point, we were already making things like all the swish knockers, the pangs,
style
cymbals, the extra thins, all the things that were difficult to make, were all being made in Canada because the demand was so high for cymbals at that point that the factory down in Norwell was just making stuff that was just high volume and easier to make, get it out there. So our folks were really good at making stuff that was difficult, which is cool because they had so many different techniques. So when somebody like Neil came up, and it's not just Neil or Chester, there are a lot of people who will come up and they'll say, you know, I'm looking for this sound and that sound. And we'll have them in the vault where we've got all these different cymbals and bring it down to an area of sound from this vast idea of what they're looking for,
bring it
down to an area of sound and then say, now what's missing? You know, what part of your voice is not here? And they'll tell us, we just go out and have somebody on the lathe or on the hammer or something like that, work on it. And the comments that I've had, which have been where I was before, the manufacturer I was with before could never even do this, or it took 3 months to make a change of the type of sound that you guys just did in 3 minutes. And I can't tell you how many times I've spoken to folks and they said, you know, I couldn't get this sound before and you guys did it in 3 days. Like, well, when you make it by hand and you know what you're doing,
and your craftsmen are extraordinary. And when your dad brought them over from Istanbul, you know, from Turkey, it was just, you guys just, it was like a rocket for you guys. It just took off. And that's what you needed was that, right? Just before everything happened. Listen, I just want to say thank you for joining me on this. And I mean, we could chat some more, but the radio show is only a half an hour, but.
Oh, you're kidding. Let's do like 10 episodes.
Well, hey, if you're in, I'm in, and we can coordinate and have a few more. And I would love to keep chatting about this and talk some more and have you on again, if you're willing.
Well, everyone, that is Andy Zildjian of Sabian Symbols. This was an awesome interview. I was surprised because at the end of the interview, when I had to say, you know, goodbye and thank you for doing this, he wanted to do more. He wants to do several because I guess he enjoyed the chat. So next week, I'm going to be putting up part two of this video where we got into speaking about Neil Peart, the drummer for Rush, who is my favorite drummer of all time, and also, well, my favorite band of all time. And we also have an interview that's going to be recorded on January 30th with Christian Stanky, who is the artist relations manager for Sabian, who actually rode motorcycles with Neil. They'd go on road trips together. And Chris was also mentioned in Geddy Lee's book as being one of Neil's personal friends. So I'm really excited about this. So please do stay tuned for part two of this interview coming next Monday. And then the first Monday of February will be with Chris Stanky. Probably another couple of parts to that interview as well. So until next week, everyone, we love you. Take it easy. Remember to listen to blasttheradio.com.